like to talk and read all things books and mystery. Funny stories. The characters of youth always tend to be a sleuth. The hardy boys will do. Don't forget Nancy Drew. It's a clue.
Hello, sleuths. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Karen. Welcome to It's a Clue, a faux crime comedy podcast sponsored by Alaska Airlines. I'm just kidding. Please don't sue us. But for those of you that have read the book, if you know, you know. And if you don't know,
yeah,
you're about
to. You're getting ready to. Yeah. We will tell you in excruciating detail.
Yes. So today, Kelly, we are discussing Nancy Drew and the clue in the crossword cipher. I thought it was going to have a lot more New York Times style crossword puzzling, and it did not.
Dude, same. It was a bummer. It was way too many logs and not enough actual crosswording.
But I do have a thought to ponder, though, if that cheers you up.
Karen, I would be disappointed if you didn't.
Okay, so we experience a lot of nature in this book. Severe, extreme acts of nature. And I'm curious, what is the most extreme act of nature that you, Kelly, have ever experienced? And please describe it in as much detail as possible.
Oh, I mean, that's an interesting one, Karen. I mean, I've lived through several hurricanes, None of them were extreme weather events. The extremity was all in the lead up.
Understood.
From the news media.
Yep.
This isn't a weather event, but I was around for the Northeast blackout of, like, when was that, 2004 or something like that?
Oh, yeah. And I was there visiting you.
Yeah. Yeah. That was crazy.
But
there was no weather event involved, I don't think. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I have one. Like, I know I've gone through some, like, really stupid, crazy snow.
Yeah.
But I can't... Yeah. I don't know. Do you have one?
Well, one time, and I don't believe you had gone to college yet. Do you remember in our parents' home, there was a tornado when we were in the basement, and Dad went up to open the front door, and he saw it?
Oh, I do, yeah.
He wanted to see how close it was, and he opened the front door and... was like, well, it's down, like, the street. Go back to the basement. Run.
It's here. Play bunnies.
I do have one extreme weather moment. So when I was touring with my theater company and I was in China, we were in a city somewhere outside of Shanghai, and I cannot remember the name of the city to save my life because it was a long time ago. But while we were there, there was a super typhoon.
Oh.
And... I was like,
That sounds bad.
I don't know if I'm going to make it through this.
Seriously? Really? Yep. I don't know that I've ever heard this story.
There was, like, only one night that I remember that was really, really bad when it found us. But we were staying in these kind of brick dormitories that were really old and did not seem, like, built to withstand a super typhoon.
I mean, fair, but if we've learned nothing from nursery rhymes, brick is where you want to be.
That's the one you want.
Sticks, not good at all.
Straw,
terrible for super typhoons.
Brick? Question mark?
Pretty good.
You're right. Yeah, and I remember my friend Myla and I were in our room that we were sharing, and the wind was howling, and the windows were shaking, and the power was out, and we were kind of holding each other in one of our beds going, well, it's been a good run.
I guess this might be it. Wow, that's scary. I didn't know that. What is a typhoon?
Well,
just like intense wind?
I think it's kind of hurricane-ish, but not necessarily sea related. And this was a super typhoon. It was like more than just a typhoon.
Yeah. It was a big one.
Yeah, it was. But here we are.
Well, Karen, so glad you made it.
At least in this timeline, and I don't recommend
at least in this timeline. Oh man, the caveats we're having to make these days are getting real.
I know. Anyway, that concludes my thought to ponder.
It's a good one.
Do you have any daily announcements,
Karen? I do. I would love to fire up the PA if you don't mind.
Please do.
Well, let's start off by saying let's make it a great day. And then we're going to move straight into mail time.
I love mail time. I love when we get mail.
I know. It's the best. So mail time. We got this incredible message via Instagram from Eloise that we wanted to share, and she said it was okay too. So I will talk about caveats. I will start this with a big asterisk of like, we're not trying to humble brag here. We're just, we thought it was a really nice message and we thought we'd read it.
So. Yeah, it like made our day, and you'll see why. It just, we can talk more about it after you read it, but I just thought this was so cool.
Yay. Okay, so Eloise says, "Hi, ladies. I just need to say a huge heartfelt thank you for making this podcast. I'm a Peace Corps volunteer in Tanzania with little cell reception or electricity, and so as a longtime Nancy Drew fan, I have turned to Nancy Drew books via my trusty e-reader to keep me sane and feed my soul."
Love.
We get it. Love. "Listening to the accompanying episode of your podcast is like dessert." So nice. "I just started Sign of the Twisted Candle and have the episode downloaded and waiting for as soon as I finish. Your humor and joy truly brighten my day like nothing else. Please keep it up. Happy sleuthing."
Eloise. What Eloise. A cool so nice. Person. That is so...
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. The Peace Corps in Tanzania?
Yeah. Eloise is doing the dang thing.
I know. Eloise, you are our hero. And thank you for listening. I don't know. We sit here in our little offices with our microphones and we're, I don't know, the words just go out into the world. And it's so cool when people are like, "I heard it. I liked it."
I know. It is very cool. And like, Tanzania is far. I just, you know.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, could I point to it on a map? I could not. But I know it's not close.
Same. We are not going to win "Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?" But
no. I couldn't point to Colorado on a map. Okay. So this is
okay. We need to do a little. It's not my strong suit.
You know what? At this point in my life, I've decided that there are just some things I'm okay with not knowing much about.
Yeah. You have a mini computer in your pocket. It's okay.
Yeah. Also, in our announcements queue is that Super Sleuth voting is going to be open this week.
Yes.
So if you are a patron on the Patreon, in the next couple of days, we're going to have your voting open. So if you would like to vote on what our next Super Sleuth would be, please consider becoming a patron. But we have narrowed the selections down to these three.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Based on listener recommendations.
Super Sleuth time is my favorite. I love it. I get so excited and
I know.
I'm smiling so big right now.
Yeah. Okay, so first option is In the Hall with the Knife by Diana Peter Freund.
Yes.
Recommended by listener Shauna. Yay. So thank you, Shauna.
Thank you, Shauna.
The Sweetness at the Bottom of the Pie by Alan Bradley. This is a Flavia Deluce novel.
Yes, book and number this one. Was
Yeah, the first one. So this was recommended by a listener, Kate M. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you, Kate.
And lastly, The Nancys by R.W.R. McDonald, which was recommended by Megan.
Yay! Oh, thank you, Megan.
Yep. Thank you to everyone who wrote in with recommendations. And we do have a running list going. So like if you made a rec that's not one of these three, we got it and it might show up in a future.
Yes, never fear. Voting. Never fear.
So yeah, that I think that concludes my announcements.
I could not be happier. Those both knocked my socks off.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I try, Karen. Yep, it's my goal to leave you sockless. So what have you been up to? Anything exciting and fun in your life?
Oh boy. Well, let's see. This weekend, Kelly, was daylight savings time, and I must be getting old because this is the first time that I've enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, usually, I've been looking forward to this for 4 months now.
I usually hate it because this is the quote-unquote bad one, as we've referred to it, where you lose an hour, and I don't like that as a sleepy person. But this year, it just hit different. Seasonal affective disorder is real, folks.
Sure is.
That first day, it was sunny. It was warm. I felt the heat on my face. I was like listening to music and cleaning my house, and I had the windows open, and I started to feel like a real girl again. I was like, oh.
I get it so much. I can't even begin to tell you.
This is a good change. This is the good one now.
Yeah, this is the good one. I can suffer through like 2 days of being a little sleepy in order to have sunlight again.
I agree. That's great. I'm emerging from my vampiric cave. I also owe you an update on the American Girl doll sale that I said I was going to go to last time. It was amazing.
Yeah. Did you find any like items that you've been searching for this year? Because I know last year you found like the original hippie Julie. San Francisco girl.
Yeah, Julie. I got Julie last year. And this year I did not on site purchase any friends, but I got some Holy Grail outfits that I had been questing for. I got one of my dolls' noses pierced, which I was very thrilled about. And here's the big update that is also very time sensitive. So the woman who pierced my doll's nose, her name is Becky. She also lives in Michigan, and she makes custom American Girl dolls made to order. And
amazing.
She has been making this series of raver girlies that I just love. And so I was like kind of chatting with her at the event, and then we started, you know, DMing on Instagram after I got back, and I now have a custom raver girl that was made just for me to my specifications. And
that's amazing.
I kid you not. She is on the UPS truck right now to be delivered any moment. And I just punked by the UPS guy. He's on his route, and I saw him back up into the driveway about 20 minutes ago, and I went running downstairs and running to the door, and then he pulled away. I think he was just turning around to go somewhere else.
Oh, that's so mean.
Yeah, it was brutal. But
you have my doll.
I know. I was like, Lucy is on your truck. So
that's
she's not
so fun.
Here yet, but hopefully when we get done recording, she will be chilling on the porch, and I will submit a photo as evidence.
Yes, please do. I cannot wait to see her. So excited.
That's all I got for you. Those are my big deal ticket items this week.
That's big updates.
What about you? What's your deal?
Oh, like Karen, same thing with the like sunlight situation. Yeah. And I have to tell you, I have it was suggested to me by a very reasonable human that maybe rather than working in my dark enclosed basement all day long, that maybe I should move my office space up into my bright, sunny, gigantic sewing room.
Oh, you don't say. I applaud this wise person that made that recommendation. Mm-hmm. I have oft wondered about this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, I know when I did it, I had my reasons. I have no idea what they are anymore, and they seem dumb because I've been up here for a day and a half, and I will say it has made a tremendous difference in my attitude.
I can imagine. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My attitude is much improved in the last 36 hours.
For those who don't know, Kelly's basement office that she's referring to, this is not like a finished basement with windows.
No, it's a dungeon.
An unfinished basement with like the water
heater.
In a
very old house.
Yeah. You did a great job of making your nook very cute, but
thank you.
I can't imagine that was a good like spirit raiser every day.
It was not, and I don't think how much I realized it wasn't until I moved yesterday morning. And then I went, "Oh, well this is better." I mean, to be honest, I think part of why it didn't really faze me is because I have been working in dark theaters my whole life. Like where literally my office was never had windows.
Yeah.
You know, like I was always in some basement or, you know, whatever.
A booth.
Yeah. So I just didn't even think about it. And now I'm like, oh, this is better.
I get it. That's how I feel every time I go outside. I'm like, why am I so grouchy? Mm. And then I'm like, oh, I haven't left the house for 2 days. And then I go onto the porch even. And I'm like, oh.
Air
is
air.
Nice.
Weird. Oh, that feels good. That feels better. Yeah, so that's been good. So I'm recording in my new sewing room / office today. Okay. I have currently a sleeping cat by me, so we're going to hope he stays that way.
Cute. Hi, Ollie.
Or else you'll probably know. And I owe you an update on the Frogman Festival.
Lay it on me. I am dying to hear about this.
So all I can say is that it was exactly what you wanted a cryptid festival to be.
Okay.
Like, tons of people dressed up in costumes. It was, like, tons of vendors selling everything from, like, you know, pins and bumper stickers and artwork to, like, there was, I mean, I almost spent so much money. There was this woman who was selling, like, trying to think how to describe it. Like, almost diorama-type things in these really beautiful frames that were, like, you know, dried flowers and dried plants and then, like, snake skeletons. And
Ooh, they were very, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, it was super cool. There were speakers and things like that. We didn't go to any of those because we got distracted by, like, hot dogs and things like that. But
yeah, legit, legit.
Yeah, it was very entertaining, so.
I'm so glad. What'd you get me?
I got you a Frogman pin.
Yay!
Lapel pin.
Oh, I will wear it every day. I can't wait.
Yeah. And he has a little wand. Ugh. That's how you know he's magic. And not just a frog.
A run-of-the-mill human-sized frog.
Yeah. Because, you know, unfortunately, there's not, like, you know, a quarter in it for scale or anything. A baby carrot next to the giant frog. So the wand is pretty critical, I think, to telling the story.
And we have to – okay, so – we talked about you going to this in the last episode, and our friend Megan was texting us, and Megan has had a frogman encounter in Loveland.
Yes.
Megan has witnessed the frogman. We're going to have to ask her to come on the podcast and tell this story. We're going to, like, briefly have a cryptid feature.
Correct. This is just Cryptid Corner now. So, Megan, if you're listening, which I'm sure you probably are, would you please record your frogman story and send it to us for inclusion in the show?
Please. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Please and thank you.
Love it.
Karen, I believe it's time for us to transition to recommendation station. Woo woo.
That was one of your best ones yet, I think, honestly.
Oh, you think?
I did
a hand gesture, which I could be lying about, but I think it helped.
You know, it's like when they say if you smile on the phone, people can hear it. I could hear the gesture in your woo woo.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right, I have two.
Great.
Number one, I recently finished The It Girl by Ruth Ware.
Okay, I do like Ruth Ware.
As do I. And I had not read this one yet, and it became available on my Libby library app. I loved it. It's a fun campus novel thriller. Mm. It's a murder mystery.
Love it.
Kind of like what we've seen in other thrillers. It flips back and forth in time between before the murder and after the murder. But it works particularly well with this story, I think. Really liked the characters. It follows a group of best friends in their college days and then after this murder takes place and where they all are and how they're processing it. The audiobook is also great. This narrator is fantastic. So highly recommend checking out The It Girl by Ruth Ware.
Awesome.
The book that I am reading on audio right now, it is so good. I'm almost done with it. I think I have about an hour left. It's called Sociopath, a Memoir. And it is by Patrick Gagné, who is a PhD. And this woman is writing about her life from childhood up to present, figuring out that she is a sociopath. And
oh my gosh.
It is so fascinating, Kelly. It just... how she starts realizing there's something different about her as a child and, you know, how she has to seek out information about this on her own because it's actually the term sociopath is actually removed from the DSM.
Interesting.
And so she, in her attempt to finally learn more about this and learn how to handle it and, you know, learn how it plays into like anxiety and things like this, she's like, you know what? I'm not finding what I need out there. I'm just going to get a PhD in psychology and figure it out myself. And she did. She's amazing. And this is her memoir. And I cannot recommend it enough. If you do want to read this, you must do the audio because she is the narrator.
Mm.
And she is one of the best narrators I have ever heard. And hearing this in her own voice, the voices of like her friends and family and stuff, it's so good. It's going to be one of my favorite books of the year.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. That is definitely right up my alley. So I will check that out immediately.
Can confirm it is on Libro FM. That's how I'm listening to it. And I just, 10 out of 10.
Thank you.
That's I think I said five out of five before. I'm so excited about this book.
You're like, I have increased my entire rating metric just for this book.
12 out of a 12 possible sociopaths.
Terrifying.
Make recommendations to me now, please.
Well, I will just confirm that your recommendation of Less by Andrew Sean Greer was fantastic.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Absolutely loved it. Five thumbs up. Fully recommend. I am currently reading, I'm only probably about a third of the way into it, of How to Be Eaten by Maria, I assume you pronounce it Edelman, Maria Edelman, which is amazing so far.
Ooh, tell, okay, what is it? I've seen it and I want to read it, but I don't know anything about it.
The basic gist thus far is a support group for modern fairy tale women, modernized fairy tale women. So it's like Bluebeard's wife, Gretel, Little Red Riding Hood, and then there's two other women in the story that I don't think anybody knows what their story is yet. Like, they're not immediately recognizable fairy tale characters.
Oh my gosh.
So it's great. It is very dark. It is not for young readers or anyone easily creeped out, but it is really good. I'm really enjoying it.
Oh,
one of the first books I've read this year that I've literally had a hard time putting down.
This is a glowing recommendation. Okay, I am going to pick this up ASAP. Yeah. This is clearly right up your alley, and also
right up my alley,
mine as well. So I thank you so much for the recommendation.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yes, fully enjoyed. So that concludes my recommendation station component.
Great job, knocked it out of the park.
Thank you so much. Right back at you. Would you be willing to tell us a little bit about Nancy Drew?
I would be honored.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much.
Okay, so as we mentioned, today we are reading Nancy Drew and the Clue in the Crossword Cipher. And Kelly, this is book number 44 in the Nancy Drew Mystery Stories series. It was written in 1967, and I have this written down in the script, and Kelly left a comment that says, what? It's written under the pseudonym Carolyn Keene, but was actually written by Harriet Stratemeyer Adams. I know. You can't believe it. Shocking.
Excuse me.
Every time. It's the 30th time I've said this.
Yeah. Major reveal.
Okay, so I wanted to focus on a really interesting kind of like geographical and geological element in this book. So towards the end of this book, we end up in a place called the Nazca Lines, and I found it to be fascinating. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a photo of this, Kelly?
I did. I looked it up.
Okay.
It's so cool.
If you are listening to this and you don't know what the Nazca Lines are, please pause and look it up. It is mind-blowing. It's spelled N-A-Z-C-A. Oh my gosh. Okay, I have facts. These are a group of geoglyphs that were made in the soil of the Nazca Desert, which is in southern Peru. According to Wikipedia, these were created between 500 BC and 580, so 1,000-year time span, which is pretty incredible. And they were essentially animal images created in the earth that people made by creating depressions or these incisions in the desert floor. They removed pebbles and they left this different color dirt exposed. Mm-hmm. They're incredible because the shapes are massive, but they're made from one continuous line. Mm-hmm. And they have been able to remain on the desert floor for so long because this area is very isolated and very dry. There's no wind. The climate stays the same all the time. So these lines have just been preserved naturally since 500 BC.
Wow. It's incredible.
The world is amazing.
It's incredible.
I just, I could watch 1,000 hours of National Geographic about this. I would like to give you some scope of size of these things. Okay.
Yes, please.
So the largest of these figures can span up to 1,200 feet.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. And
wow.
Yeah. They're massive. The whole area where all of these live is 170 square miles.
Wow.
And my only frame of reference for this is that I know when I lived in San Francisco, San Francisco is 7 by 7. The whole city of San Francisco is 49 square miles. So this like desert area with these geoglyphs is 170 square miles. It's massive.
Wow.
I specifically found the measurement of the monkey, which we talk about in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 305 feet by 190 feet.
Wow. Wow. It's huge.
Huge, Kelly. Huge. Like, I remember in the book when they're digging, Nancy says mm-hmm. the arm of the monkey is the width of a city street, basically.
Yeah.
Big.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Do I have your appetite whet? Because I've got one more thing that's going to blow your mind.
It is wetted.
This is my favorite thing when I get to tell you this about a historical thing. There are still more of these being discovered today.
What? How is that possible?
Yeah, I know. I know. So, like, we could Nancy Drew it and go find more of these. they discovered 143 more of these in 2019.
143 new, like, pictures.
Yes. And they've been using, so Yamagata University and IBM Japan did this huge project to quest these out in 2019 and found 143 more. They've been using machine learning methods and AI to try to figure out where more of these might be, which is super cool. They found a cat in 2020. And
I love a cat.
I know. And here's the deal. So the total number of these geoglyphs that we are aware of right now is 358.
Wow.
But they are confident more of these can be discovered. And so drones and AI are now being employed by all these anthropologists to enable them to discover many more.
Wow. Did you see anything about, like, theories on, I mean, to ask why something was made seems strange. Like, it's art, I guess, but
yes,
it's just hard to imagine, like,
there's a lot about this on the Wikipedia page. There are tons of articles. There are videos you can watch about it with different theories of, you know, why these were made. And a lot of them are, of course, like ceremonial assumptions. Did you just yawn?
I did. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my gosh. My history lesson has gone on too
long. Nope. It's very good. I blame the time change.
It's all right. I forgive you.
I'm so sorry.
Anyway, we should go to the Nazca Lines and discover some.
Okay. I mean, I'm not a desert person.
Fine. I say I'll that like over. I am.
I know. I was like, that's very interesting, Karen. Thank you for digging in.
Wah, wah.
I know. I'm ashamed.
I liked it. All right. That is all I have. So let's move on from my dry history lesson to the best part of the best part of the podcast, the one sentence plot competition.
Yay. So one sentence plots, we ask you on our Instagram to look at the cover of the book and tell us without reading the book in one sentence what you think the book is about based entirely on the cover. Mm-hmm. And on this cover, Nancy is wearing a very chic 60s dress with neon green chevrons. She is standing in front of a large image of a log, which has a swirly pattern and cryptic letters engraved on it. And she is also holding a log slice and gazing at it, intrigued, with her trusty magnifying glass.
Yes.
Yes. The winner this week of the One Sentence Plot Competition is at Neon Statues, who said, "When the River Heights Lumber Mill reports a rash of indecipherable symbols etched into their most recent batch of logs, Nancy quickly finds herself questing after an evil puzzle master. But at Journey's End, what will she do when she lays her eyes upon the final carving and its bone-chillingly articulate message? Ned was here."
And was spelled W-U-Z.
Yes. A very important point. It was so good. I want to read that book.
Same. Full same.
Yeah. Did you select a runner-up?
I did, and I am delighted to announce that I have chosen my bestie, Calvin, whose submission came through via Marimo. Calvin writes, "Nancy Drew and Moana solve a case where they do what they do best, solve codes and find swirly rocks."
Amazing.
I love Moana. It is
me too.
One of the best movies of all time. So Calvin, in the words of Moana, "There's just no telling how far you'll go."
Nice.
I love that
song.
Well,
congratulations to all the winners.
Yes.
We hope the pride you get from this win gets you through the weekend. It's all we can offer you. Well, without further ado, Karen, it is time for today's super fast plot. And I believe that you have designated that I read it.
Yes.
But you wrote it.
I cobbled this together, and I would like you to do the honors this week. And I have planted several funnies that I hope will make you laugh while you read it.
Great. I'm very excited. Here we go. Carla Ponce, a beautiful young woman from Lima, Peru, is visiting her family in River Heights. She has brought a family heirloom with her, a wooden plaque that bears the semblance of a carved monkey, a swirling emblem behind him, and some mysterious etched words. It also bears the name Aguilar, which is one of Carla's ancient relatives. Carla tells Nancy that this is definitely, without question, a 300-year-old treasure map her family inherited, and asks Nancy to help solve the mystery. Nancy is on board immediately and starts Googling. Instantly begin the death threats, robberies of the Drew household, and attempts to keep Nancy from sticking her snout into other people's business. So there must, in fact, be something valuable about this plaque. Turns out, Carla's family is big rich, and they invite the Clue crew on an all-expenses-paid trip to South America. We travel to Lima, Cusco, Machu Picchu, and more to interview locals, compare the wooden plaque to the rare trees in different areas, and get some major sleuthing done. Some important happenings. Nancy sits on a llama for a photo and gets carried away when it becomes enraged. The Clue crew gets separated during a storm, and Bess has to defend the fortress, aka their hotel room, from someone trying to bust in and steal the plaque. The full door of their airplane explodes off mid-flight, and Nancy almost gets sucked into the sky. There goes our Alaska Airlines sponsorship. Carla dresses up in disguise without Nancy's permission and gets kidnapped from an underground casino. The list goes on, but for the sake of time, we eventually determine that the plaque points to the Nazca lines, which Karen has already talked about. Perhaps too much detail. I didn't say that. Carla's dad charters an amateur archaeological expedition, and they dig the whole thing up. Aguilar's mummy is found, and they realize he had perished there. But beforehand, he sent his companion away with the plaque as a clue to where he ended up and where he buried some loot. Right as they're about to find the gold, a herd of parachutists falls from the sky and tries to kidnap literally everyone. But George judos them into submission, the helicopter police take the bad guys away, and everyone unearths a ton of valuable golden statues and historical documents. The bad guy was Luis Losa, who was using federally protected ancient wood to carve hollow spoons and import drugs into the United States. He learned about the Ponce family's plaque and, obvi, wanted in on that too, so he expanded his operation to try to stop the Clue crew in their tracks. Nancy prevails, Losa confesses to everything and goes to Peruvian prison, and our only reward is another job well done. The end.
The end!
Beautifully summarized, sister.
Oh, thank you. I, as always, did my best, and
you did a great job.
The best,
and it
was all I could
very
do.
Funny. I'm glad I pre-read it a little bit, or else I would have had to stop and laugh six times.
You flatter me. Okay, so tell me, Kelly, what are your general thoughts and musings, aka your GT and M's?
So I have to tell you, I appreciated your plot more than I can say because it clarified most of the book to me.
Oh, good.
My brain could not stay wrapped around what was happening in this book. I don't know. I think I may have mixed feelings on these travelogues.
Okay.
Like, I enjoy going on the trips and, you know, seeing different places, but the mystery just always seems to get kind of, like, jammed into a travel adventure. But am I just cranky?
No, I think you're right. And it's jammed in on a travel adventure, and we have to switch gears so much between, like, very serious thing and then, like, ooh, let's go to this cool museum, or
yeah,
let's learn this fun fact. And it just, it gets complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, what were your GT and M's?
There were some things I liked and some things that, to your point, I still just don't fully understand, I would say.
Yeah.
We had some very funny moments and some new situations, like traveling with the Ponce family was interesting. Uh-huh. Can't wait to discuss
sure
that.
Sure was.
But I guess I'm I'm not really sure how this mystery began, and I am happy to share my qualms about that in our discussion.
Love it. Love it. Well, let's talk about some of the things we did like, our favorite parts.
Okay, can I go first?
Would you like to start? Please, please. Yes. I would love it.
I'm so glad you asked as I interrupted and said, I want to go. Okay, so I mentioned that I loved that we got to travel in luxury with the Ponce family.
Mm-hmm.
Senor Ponce, who is Carla, our kind of main girl's dad, just immediately tells the Clue crew, I'm going to bring all of you to South America. And, you know, not only are we going on a trip, but it is going to be like 10 out of 10 flying first class, you know, yada. It just felt very Succession to me. I was like, is this the Roy family? Because
a little bit.
He's going on a work trip, but he is sure that he can get them on the private jet. And, you know, everything is catered and the best food and the best hotels. At the end, when we go to the Nazca lines, he summons this private helicopter for the trip. He brings a camp cook along. There are butlers that are going to tend to them. They bring travel yurts with them so that while they're there, they're camping in luxury while these people cook for them. I mean, oh, and he somehow gets an official archaeologist from the government to come with them. I'm just like, how big is this helicopter is my question. Right.
It's a big chopper. No wonder they need to find this gold treasure.
Yeah, for real. So I was loving Travels with Logan Roy, a.k.a. Senor Ponce. Also, at one point, Bess is concerned because they've now traveled to multiple places. They've gone to Cuzco and the Nazca Lines and Lima back and forth. And Bess is like, I think this next sub trip sounds fun, but I'm a little low on funds. So, like, can we pause? And Mr. Ponce says to them in, I think, Quechan is how you say this, the Incan language. He says something that they don't understand, and then he laughs and says, oh, that's short for I'm rich.
You girls go have fun.
Yeah, he keeps telling them, like, oh, just go have fun. Don't worry about money. And George's immediate response is, well, in that case.
Right? She's like, well, okay, fine by us.
Don't
like,
mind if I do.
George has zero compunctions about accepting the free trip offer, so.
Yeah, loved that. Loved that. That was my favorite part.
Nice. Well, I'm gonna list something that is probably not your favorite part, but we're going to call it Alaska Airlines 1.0.
I knew it. I knew this was going to be
Karen,
what you talked
about. I was reading this in horror thinking about you. I was like, Karen cannot get away from airplane incidents in these books.
No, thank God I'm not scared of boats too, because this podcast would have been over 30 episodes ago.
So long ago. Yeah, so the basic gist is that they're coming back from one of these trips, which includes, you know, the whole Clue crew, but also the Ponce family and a whole bunch of like business executives from Mr. Ponce's work. And they're in this plane flying above the land, and Nancy is like, I'm gonna go up there and just like check on the pilots.
Yeah,
you know, remember when passengers could still do that?
Yeah.
And so she just kind of like roams up to the front of the plane, and as she's standing there, the door just like falls off the plane.
Yeah, it does.
just comes off. And Nancy is barely able to like catch a luggage strap or something and keep herself in the plane, but she's getting ready to get sucked out.
Yeah, there's a
she
picture
can't hold on
of it.
Too much longer.
The drawing in the book is terrifying. She's like holding on to the netting like cargo rack that holds the luggage in. Like,
yes,
flying
it's a very Air Force One moment. Yeah. You know. So anyway, like people start jumping up trying to like pull her back into the plane, but then they start going out too. So it takes like five or six people to drag the whole, you know, pyramid up on back into the plane. And, you know, eventually they find out that the bad dudes had, you know, taken bolts out of the hinge or something, which feels like, you know, I would say up until about 3 weeks ago, I would have been like, that's
unbelievable.
That's not how planes work. It's completely unbelievable.
And
now
yet.
I'm like, that seems like a loophole that Carolyn Keene figured out a while ago. Also, did you catch that this is a quote unquote like old school plane that's not pressurized. So
no,
you just have to hang on to a canister of air the whole time.
That's a separate plane.
Oh.
There are two plane incidents in this book.
Oh, I was so, okay.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. But so this plane incident happens. This is a regular plane. This is a, you know, Delta 5150. I don't know. But then when they go to Machu Picchu.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Different plane that's tiny and it's not pressurized.
Right. I was combining. I just combined all the plane incidents in my head. No wonder I was confused. Every plane is the same plane. Every llama is the same llama. Just.
There are many llamas. Yes, talk about the old plane because this is insane.
I mean, it was just that. It's what we just said. Like, it's this tiny little old, like, rattle trap thing that, you know, kind of like a puddle jumper, but less so. And yeah, it's not pressurized, so they have to hold a canister of air the whole time in case they feel faint while they're up there.
I got the impression
that doesn't seem like a good idea.
No, and I got the impression that this plane was not supposed to go where it was going. I was picturing the type of like rattle trap thing that people take up to go skydiving. That's like not even got like seats in the back, and you just kind of like sit on the floor, and it's metal on the inside. And that's what I was picturing.
It's like a cargo plane.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think this plane was meant to go as high as it was.
No, probably not. Probably not. I mean, definitely not cleared by the FAA, I would think.
No, or you know, Karen.
Just breathe down. Everybody's issued a paper bag on your way in, you know.
That sounded like a joke Dad would tell.
It does. Okay, what else have you got?
I would like to talk about one of my favorite things that happens not just in this book but others, and it is what I call shady archaeology.
Ooh, yes. Go on.
There is no way that these people should have been digging up one of the most famous archaeological sites in the world.
No, it was insane.
They just helicopter in with their little shovels and they're like, start on the monkey's tail.
Correct. I'm like, didn't we learn anything from what was the last one where they did this? They also dug up a human.
Oh, they did. Yes.
Yeah.
Shady Pines. Shadow. Nope.
Yeah. Shady Pines.
You know what I'm talking about.
It's like a combination of Golden Girls and Nancy
Shadow
Drew.
Ranch.
Shady Pines.
Yes.
Yep. The Phantom of Pine Hill.
Thank you. That's what it was.
I got there. I like Shady Pines better.
There's no way that this is the right group of people that should be coming in to do hours of digging at all in this archaeological site. They also are not like properly equipped to be doing this in the desert, like manual labor. Oh. They could have died. Right. Just get the professionals in here, Kelly. Yeah.
Karen, I agree with you. Don't yell at me.
I'm not. I'm just still stunned. And also, they did have this quote-unquote government archaeologist with them, and I don't trust this man's credentials. Mm-mm. That he was like, all right, young ladies. He even says at one point, he's like, Nancy, I don't think we should dig up the monkey's tail. I don't think that's the right place. And then he's like, well, my idea was wrong. Go for it, Nance. And she just lays in with her shovel. What?
I know. It's wild.
I know. Did you have any thoughts on this other than horror?
Well, I would just say that, like, then they find a whole human mummy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
That the decision is made to, quote unquote, reinter the body. And then maybe somebody will come back and get it later.
Kelly.
Like, I just, listen, if I'm ever mummified and you find me,
I just want you to have
full authorization to go ahead and take me with you, okay? You don't have to leave me there.
I don't ever want to find your mummy. You're going to live forever, but I understand.
That's knock on wood.
I think my favorite part about this corpse is,
what?
They're like, let's see if there's any identification on him. And they're like, oh, there's a note in his shirt pocket.
Yep.
Kind of like when they found George on Louis the 14th's bed and she had a note in her shirt pocket. The mummy also had like a post-it in his lapel.
They're reusing some tricks for sure. I like that this human has been deceased and buried in the desert so long that he's mummified, but the note survived.
Plus one.
Just saying.
That's some strong paper.
It is. Okay, shall I?
Yes, please.
This
please
is my
shall.
Last one.
Okay.
Bess and George are in rare form, and also we basically have no Ned.
Please say more words, because this was quite a big piece of the book.
So Bess is once again awesome. She's just legit my favorite character. She's so funny and so sweet, and she saves the day. At one point, they're all kind of separated, and she realizes that she overhears something and is worried that the bad guys are going to try to break into their hotel room to steal the plaque while they're gone again, which I feel like is valid, and somebody else should have thought of this since their hotel room had already been broken into to steal the plaque a couple of times. But they just keep leaving it there, like, you know, underneath a dress, in an unwrinkleable dress. That was an important part to point out. Anyway, so she goes back to the hotel room. I will say she had no plan, Karen. No plan. She goes back to the hotel room, closes and locks the door, and then proceeds to just, like, sit there and wait and see if someone breaks in to try to steal the plaque.
Terrifying.
There's no plan. It's not like she has the police on speed dial. She doesn't even have a baseball bat. She's got nothing. But she's just going to kind of sit there and see what happens. And guess what? People try to break in. And they're having trouble getting through the lock. So a dude starts trying to file the hasp down to open the door. And so he's like sticking this file through the crack of the door. And Bess is like, my only move here is I'm just going to snatch that file. And so she just like rips it through the crack out of his hands, and he's, you know, yells in frustration and goes away. I was like, good job, Bess. Amazing.
It worked.
Yeah. George is obsessed with judo, apparently. Like, yeah. I think this is new information. It's so funny. Like, she brings it up so many times. Right at the start of the book, she's like, I'm taking judo in case I need to throw any villains off of a cliff.
Which
I felt was very specific.
Foreshadowing, perhaps.
Yeah. It's like, all right. and then she immediately gets to judo a guy who breaks into the Drew's house.
Yeah, like moments later.
Yeah. Is judo a verb?
It is
I
now.
Judo, you judo.
He, she, it, he, judos. She, it,
judos.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Also, it comes in handy against the evil parachutists at the end. She judos all of them.
Yeah, she does. She does. Yeah. She saves the day with her chop.
Yeah. I will say George is horrible to Bess this entire book, and it made me hate George a lot.
Really, really, really vile.
Really bad. Not cool. I don't know why we're talking about Bess like this. On the plus side, Ned was involved very little. Like, he showed up and basically was a taxi driver.
That's true.
He came and he took Nancy to the airport.
That's true. However, I would like to read a quote for you that I highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know we point these out when it happens, because there's not really much on-screen romance with Nancy and Ned.
No.
And in this book, this quote, I was stunned. I was stunned. Mm.
Read it.
I have to find it. Stand by. As Ned bid her goodbye and looked straight at her, Nancy detected a wistful look in his eyes. He said, "My thoughts are repetitions of your father's and Hannah's combined." He took both of her hands in his and added, "You will come back safely, won't you?" He kissed her.
Mm.
That was kind of the most, like, florid moment we've had.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
And then Nancy's like, "Thanks so much. See you soon."
Yeah. My flight's leaving in 20. If you could take me to the airport real quick, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Man, you're right, though. That is much more romance than we've ever gotten from him before.
I agree. It's because he knew he wasn't going to show up for the rest of the book. He's like, I got to pack it in now.
Got to make this count. Usually they have like a very like buddy energy.
For sure.
You know?
I agree.
So, okay. I dig it. Nice point.
Well, did you have anything that you would change about this, a la it would have been awesome if...
I mean, I don't have a lot to contribute here. I wish Bess would tell George to kick rocks. I really do.
Full like same.
I wish she would stand up for herself a little bit. It's very upsetting. I think that I mean there were I think the thing that stuck out to me most in this book that kind of bugged that I wished we could have either not had or exploited a little bit more would have been when at one point the plaque gets stolen from their hotel room and they wind up finding it in the hotel gift shop.
Oh, yeah.
Because the thief, upon successfully getting his hands on the treasure he's been hunting for, turns around and sells it to the first person he meets for $150, which, granted, is a lot more, you know, in 1967 or whatever than it is now. But, like, still. And then the person who buys it displays it on the wall of the gift shop for safekeeping while they go out to shop or something. It was so weird. So I kind of wish that we found out that dealing in counterfeit antiquities was part of this whole con.
Oh.
And that I think it would have been cool if he stole the real one from Nancy and then a counterfeit winds up in the gift shop for Nancy to find. And maybe the Clue crew doesn't even realize they have a fake one until everybody gets arrested at the end.
I like it. I like it.
It would have been cool if, like, the arrests had been made, they get the real plaque back, and then Nancy understands they need to dig at the tail of the monkey or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I do. I like that a lot. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So that's kind of the one that popped to mind. How about you? Any suggestions?
I thought it would have been awesome if the Clue crew actually did get arrested by the Peruvian government. So when the parachutists, the herd of parachutists all drop down, they pretend to be the government and they're like, you're under arrest. You cannot be digging here.
Which makes perfect sense.
It was the bad guy pretending so he could kidnap them. But I was like, actually, that should have happened because you're digging up a wonder of the world and desecrating a mummy. I felt like they needed some consequences, honestly. And then maybe when they're, you know, they're arrested, they're in the brig with Elgato's other perps that they've already nabbed. They get some sort of time sensitive clue. They're like, we got to bust out of prison to like intercept this thing before it happens. And this then redeems them. So they're allowed to return the country and return to River Heights. And
I love that.
Even throw in that George can still use judo.
Oh, well, that's nice of you. Okay. Yeah,
maybe to escape the prison.
I like that suggestion.
Yeah.
To escape prison. She breaks him out.
I was having a hard time suspending my disbelief that we dug up the Nazca lines.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Like, maybe we even get, like, a metal detector out here first, you know?
Yeah, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Karen, do you have anything to add to Nancy's never-ending resume?
Oh, I do. Okay, so she kind of rapidly picks up some ancient Incan, or the Quechan language that I'm sure I am pronouncing incorrectly, but she just is a quick learn of this language. And then she's interviewing an old man who can only speak this language, and so that she doesn't miss anything, she's phonetically writing everything that he says. And I'm like, that's impressive. She's like, I gotta write this down so I can get it to a translator, and maybe there are clues here. I said she's kissing on Ned. Unlike most books, and also unlike most books, we did not have vacation boyfriends.
No, we didn't, did we?
Which was, I didn't miss them.
No, same.
Didn't miss it. We had too much else to do, too much going on. I feel like the Clue crew collectively is getting much faster at nabbing bad guy accomplices right away.
Yes.
And getting them out of the picture. And would you agree? I feel like this has been the case for the last few books.
Yes, we've seen that on several occasions, including this one. And I agree with you. And I noticed it as well. Like, oh, we're capturing these guys a little faster. And then, you know, as we kind of complained about early on, like, they need to be leaning on these accomplices a little bit more, you know, and they're doing that.
And it really helps them narrow things down because they're like, we're still getting followed, but we already put those three guys in jail. So there must be someone else.
Right.
And I feel like we're getting tighter in our sleuthing here.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a good point.
Thank you. And then last but not least, I said Nancy has nerves of steel during airplane disasters. Like, my God, this woman almost got sucked out of the plane, but then she gets back to her seat and she's sitting there thinking, this is a really impressive pilot. Like, he's doing a great job. I would be catatonic.
Catatonic, and I think my thought about the pilot would not be he's doing a great job. It would be, who's doing the pre-flight checks on this thing?
Yes. You'll never fly in this town again.
You'll be getting a letter.
From my attorney, a.k.a. Carson Drew.
Exactly, exactly. Carson, fire up the lawsuit machine.
Okay, so as we move towards our conclusion here, what open questions do you have? I know you have a few, but what's going to keep you up at night about this?
I mean, we've talked about several. One of the things that just continuously bothers me in these books, though, is like, how do these particularly international bad guys discover that these random citizens a million miles away are looking for a treasure they didn't even know about?
I just don't understand.
I just don't understand. Like, they have ears everywhere. I don't know. Like, it's most, that's my question on this one, I think.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. What about you?
Mine is very reductive and goes back to the beginning, like page one. Why did Carla's parents in Peru let her take their most prized family heirloom with her? And she's not bringing it for a purpose. She's just casually bringing it on summer vacation to River Heights. And she specifically says she brought it because she might get homesick and she needed something to remind her of home. But, like, I don't know, like, bring a picture of your family or your stuffed animal. Yeah. Like, I cannot believe, like, none of this would have happened if she hadn't just been carting this ancient piece of treasured wood around with her.
Wood, right. No, it makes no sense. Like, it would have made much more sense if she had seen an article about Nancy in the newspaper and gone, like, I'm going to be living right down the block all summer from this, like, famous teen detective. Can I take our family mystery with me to see if she can help us solve it? Like, that would have made sense.
I agree. We couldn't answer each other's open questions, so we'll just have
to... No, there's no answer.
We'll just wonder. And wonder.
They were just... You know, it's called open-ended questions for a reason, I suppose.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, Karen, this week we are reading Nancy Drew and the Crossword Cipher out of a 12 possible Parachutists.
Love it.
Yeah. Care to tell us what you rated it?
I don't have a lot of math this week, and so this is a whimsical rating, but I'm going to give it a 7 out of 12 Parachutists.
Okay.
As I just stated, I thought the entry point of the story was a little weak. I don't know why Carla brought this heirloom. I don't know why the family has just assumed forever that this leads to buried treasure for no real reason. I don't know. Question marks galore. That being said, I do love some shady archaeology, and George's judo adventures made me lol. And as you know, I loved learning about the Nazca lines. And I love an actual hunt for treasure.
Yes. All fair.
That being said, I will not bother to specify how many parachutists I removed for Boeing yet again failing to QA its aircrafts.
QC?
QA?
Quality control?
Quality was lacking.
Yeah, fair. I support it.
Okay, what's your rating?
I gave it 6 out of 12 parachutists.
Okay, tell me.
For an action-packed book, I found it boring. So minus 3.
Mm-hmm.
George is a jerk the whole time. So minus 3.
Wow, George is taking it down for everyone.
Yeah, she really ruined it for the whole team. Plus 1 for the mummy. That was cool. I liked that. Minus 1 for stealing the mummy's treasure. Not cool, because that's how curses get off the ground.
You're so right.
So if my math is right, 6 out of 12.
Yeah, you did it.
Thank you.
Way to defend your answer. I didn't even bother. I just...
You defended?
Waved my hands around in the air and said 7.
Listen, you can rate it however you want. So it was perfectly valid.
Thank you.
Do you know what we're reading next?
I don't, and that's what's awesome about it, because next time we're discussing a super sleuth, which, as we mentioned, is going to be determined by our beloved Helen Cornings, our Patreons. So as Kelly mentioned at the beginning, we're going to announce the title on Instagram ASAP as soon as the vote is done. So if you would like to participate and read along with us, you can do so.
And if you would please rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend, and you can find us on Instagram at It's a Clue Podcast.
And if you want to vote on the Super Sleuth and you're inclined to become a Helen Corning friend, you can do that on Patreon, which is a bestie of the show. We'll give you a shout out. And in addition to voting, you get bonus content every episode about how the mystery was solved and how we, Kelly and Karen, would do it ourselves.
Yeah. And Karen, remember what we learned today in Nancy Drew and the clue in the crossword cipher.
Oh, tell me.
If Nancy tells you to dig, you start digging. If Nancy tells you where to dig, you dig there. Otherwise, you're going to spend a full day in the desert flinging pebbles and melting in the sun and halting everything. So just do what Nancy says.
Noted, and I will. And with that,
happy sleuthing.
Try to think of new ways to say it to make you laugh.
It's a Clue is hosted by Kelly Biscopink and Karen Farmer. Our logo is designed by Courtney Kyle. You can find her on social media at I Am Courtney Kyle. The It's a Clue theme song was written and recorded by Danny W. You can find her on Facebook at Danny W. Music. Audio engineering is graciously done by our friend Mark Goodlow.